on Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, you might have to take over the show. I may or may not be canceled.
Oh, what did you do?
Well, Saturday morning, I was feeling a little thick. We had some friends over to the house, and I was making old fashions for everybody, and I had, you know, one or two myself. And the next morning, Jen and I woke up, and Jen wanted Dunkin' Donuts, right? So I still, like, my head feels like it takes up an entire room. I just feel exhausted. I pull myself into the car, drive down the road to Dunkin' Donuts, and Jen usually puts in her order via text, right? Makes sense. So I get to the window, or I get to the little screen thing where you have to put in the order, and I read this verbatim. I'll have a large iced caramel craze latte with almond milk and no whip, a turkey sausage sandwich, and your sexy butt in a tortilla.
How did that happen?
Well, that was the last sentence that Jen left for me, and I Ron Burgundy'd it. I just read it without even thinking. I just read, and your sexy butt in a tortilla. The poor girl who was... who is on the other end of the line, I didn't even recognize what I did until she goes, "Excuse me?" I swear to God, if there were no cars in front of me, if there was nobody in front of me, I would have just raced through the drive-thru and never gone back to that Dunkin'.
That was an elaborate humble brag about your wife saying you have a sexy butt. That's what
I don't, though. It's the sad thing. It was, you know, it's mostly like, you know, diet sausage turkey or something that she would want. But yeah, that was my weekend. How was your weekend?
It was good, man. I'm, you know, no story is quite like that, but I'm happy, man. Like, last night was such a celebration with Kobe in the house, and who knows how this season ends, but I'm just enjoying every moment of covering a really good Lakers team and all that comes with that. And people are paying me to watch this team and create content that I'd be creating anyway, like a bunch of suckers. So I'm just, you know, sometimes you take stock of your life and, you know, personal stuff. My work day, I'm with my brother 4 or 5 hours a day, talking shit, watching basketball, drinking beer, and that's just my life, you know? And I don't know, man, just everything, watching Kobe and LeBron vibing with each other, man, it's just like, all the bad times of the last 6, 7 years, like, this doesn't make up for that, but it sure feels good after all of that.
I don't know, I think it kind of makes up for it.
I mean, we've got a ways to go to make up for it. I'm not saying after 13 games we're...
As much as it could make up for it at this point, though, I would say it definitely has.
Yes, definitely that.
I just finished getting shouted out kind of sort of on Instagram by Danny Green.
What happened?
Well, so you saw... Did you see he just...
got drug tested?
So I sent him that like two arms or two hands meme. Right, where it's like the black guy's arm and the white guy's arm, they meet in the middle, and then you're supposed to put like the thing that they have in common. Mm-hmm. So I put like Danny Green, Alex Caruso, quote unquote, random drug tests, and I replied to him back with that. So he screen grabbed it, and he said, and he like did like the laughing emoji thing. So I'm basically like, I'm one of the guys now.
You're in.
Danny Green has now been on the show. We had Kobe in last night's show or yesterday's show, and then we had Danny Green in today's show. It's good stuff. Today's show. We are going to – I want to pick your brain a little bit about the game. There isn't much you can glean from that. Atlanta just is not very good. And I didn't think Atlanta played very hard. They look like a team that Chandler Parsons took out on the town
all weekend. Yes, they did.
So there isn't much you can take from it. So we're mostly going to spend the time – or this show kind of diving into questions. There was a question from yesterday that specifically asked for both Pete and me. So we'll get into that one. Regarding last night's game, Frank Vogel said after the game that he needs to get Anthony Davis more shots. Do you think he means that, like, getting him on the ball on the move more? Do you think that how would you, if you were Frank Vogel, get Anthony Davis more shots?
Yeah, it's more like easier looks. It's interesting. They still have not run a ton of LeBron AD pick and rolls. I don't know if they've been dissuaded from that because teams have switched it, but I would love to see more Rondo Anthony Davis pick and rolls when they're out on the court together. That would be something that I think they could benefit from. That's it. Like, yes, you can have him as an off-ball screener. You can have him coming off of flex cuts from the corner, which has happened a couple of times this season. But ultimately, he's not getting a lot of role man opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think they can make the biggest change in the simplest way.
Especially in those minutes where it's just him out there at the five. Like, Kuzma's emergence, I think, we should start seeing that ripple effect now with Anthony Davis. Because he's hitting something like, and then eventually he's going to now. So he started the season crazy cold, and now over the last five games he's been crazy hot, right? He's like shooting 47% with 6+ attempts per game from three-point range. So you saw the progression. Now we're going to find out where between those two things he's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be closer to the beginning of the season? Is he going to be closer to where he is right now? I think he's going to be closer to where he is right now, just because he was so bad at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. But I think what that's going to wind up doing is opening things up for other players out there on the court. And in those minutes where you have Kuzma and AD as kind of like your four and your five, I'd like to see those minutes take place. If you're going to have Rondo out there, right, if you're going to have, because Davis does play a lot with the bench units, so if you could figure out a way to have those three guys out there on the court and Rondo getting both those guys looks, then that's how they all serve their best purpose alongside each other, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed with that. It's been interesting. I don't know if you've seen the numbers on Davis at center, but from a net rating standpoint, he's been by far the Lakers' worst five,
yeah,
which is the exact opposite of what's historically been the case and what we were expecting going into this year. So those lineups may include Dwight at the five with Kuz at the three and AD at the four. That AD-Dwight combo has been really good on the defensive end, especially. The thing about Kuzma, I think Kuz is going to continue to see the types of looks that he's getting, because even if he's hot, at no point are you going to be like, oh, let's send help away from AD. Like, that's part of the benefit that Kuz is going to have
or Green
playing
or
off of AD. Right, right. So AD still is, you know, an enormous factor, even though he's shooting poorly. But I do agree with Vogel that they're going to need to get him easier looks. And I would love to see that coming off of Rondo AD pick and rolls, because I think it gets more out of not only AD, but also Rondo too.
Yeah, I wish the Lakers had, and this is where they kind of miss Boogie, they don't have any true fours that just space the floor. Like, you could technically play Jared Dudley, but that's not really an option in the grand scheme of things. But they don't. I think part of the reason why AD's shots have been so difficult is he's either playing alongside JaVale or Dwight, who are going to clog up the lane, right? Or he's going to play alongside LeBron. And seeing as they aren't running the pick and roll with him and LeBron, well, that isn't really opening the floor up for him either. So I think they got to find that kind of role in there. And that's where, you know, they could use a four who could space the floor a little more. And I think, again, that's where Kuzma emerging seems to help him the most.
That's right. And even if it's, I mean, heck, you could have AD setting off-ball screens for Kuz on those curls and pops, and having those two guys work off of each other, it gives the defense like a, you know, close out to shooter, worry about the roll man type of thing that, again, I think the vast majority of that attention still goes to Anthony Davis, but you will pay more than anybody else if it's Kuz coming off of that off-ball screen rather than someone else, because Kuz has the ability to shoot that shot, drive to the basket, or play make in ways that other guys don't. So yeah, just getting AD in more possessions where he's a screener for somebody who's a scoring and or playmaker threat. Yeah, just a threat in some respect. I think that'll help resolve this.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's take a quick second. When we come back, we're going to answer your guys' questions. And we just get news right now from Ramona Shelburne that apparently Kawhi is not playing again. So we are still waiting for the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George debut when they're out there together.
That That's crazy, man. Like, they've got a really good team, but this has got to be something where you're starting to wonder and ask questions. I know it's November and all of that, but Kawhi has a degenerative condition in his thigh, and I'm no Dr. Brar or anything, but that's going to impact the knee and the issues around that in ways throughout the rest of his career. Like, that's something that, especially on matters involving Kawhi, we don't generally get the real story about what's happening until long afterward. But this is like a season-changing storyline, or potentially so, if this is what, the third game in a row? And the last game he played in, man, I don't know if you watched that game, but he looked like an old man out there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big
Kawhi His turnover fan. Numbers are way higher. And I think part of that is, like, he's facilitating more than he has in his career. But I think that also has to do with he hasn't quite looked right this year.
He's not moving well, man. I'm a big fan of his game, and regardless of what went down with the Lakers and all of that. But watching him, I'm just like, that does not look like the same guy. And I'm just really curious about what's going on, because that's something, if Kawhi has something physically up with him, bro, they traded the farm for him, and he's only signed for this year and next. He's got an opt-out the season after that. So, I don't know, man. This is one of those stories that, like, oh, yeah, he missed his third game in a row, but between how he looked and the amount of time that he's missed up until this point, it's worth keeping an eye on.
I'm kind of sort of playing telephone here, but I've had enough conversations with people who cover various teams and stuff like that, and there's a bit of an undertone to Kawhi's injury that people around the league are kind of going, like, what is actually the deal here? Or at least hinting at the fact that it's worse than people have kind of let on.
Wow. That's
why people were so surprised when Doc gave the statement he did. Right. When he cost the Clippers $50,000, where he said, no, Kawhi's fine, and this is just us making sure that he remains fine. People are like, but he isn't. Right. And having missing, you know, him now missing three games since that statement, I believe that's something's going on there. It's something worth keeping an eye on for sure. All right. Let's get to our questions. Lalo 1711 is a bit of a longer one. Hey, Anthony, I sent this question to the Lake Show and thought it would be fun to hear Pete's answer too. Hope you don't mind asking him this. Help, Magic somehow got his hands on the Infinity Gauntlet and snapped his fingers, causing the entire NBA to lose half their roster. Luckily, Adams... We're making Magic Johnson Thanos.
Okay.
All right, so he snapped his finger... And half the rosters are gone. So luckily, Adam Silver prepared for this situation after multiple CBA meetings with Thanos Johnson and has created a time machine. created a time machine allowing each team to rebuild their roster by bringing back up to three players from past seasons at each player's respective season's peak.
How high was this dude?
I don't know, man.
It's a great question. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just like, is it August right now? Like, this is so elaborate. I am intrigued. Carry on.
It can be either one superstar, one role player, and one bench player, or two superstars and one bench player, with the team split as such. Who would you guys bring to save this season? Team one, AD, JaVale, and Kuzma, KCP, Daniels, Caruso, and Rondo. Or team two, LeBron, Dwight, Green, Dudley, Norvell, Bradley, and Cook. I thought we could get two superstars.
Can you repeat the question? I'm like 75% joking because I got lost at the end.
No,
I was paying attention this time, I promise.
Let's just make it... All right, so let's make the hypothetical here that you can either build a team around both AD and LeBron, but you lose like the next three best players on the Lakers, or you can have either one of LeBron or AD and be able to use the rest of your roster outside of the other superstar.
No, you keep the superstars, man. You always keep the superstars. I'm sorry if we butchered the spirit of that guy's question.
Me too.
With that, but yes, keep the superstars. I'm sorry, I got confused.
The season has made it so clear, so crystal clear, that you have LeBron, you have Anthony Davis, you're going to have a really good team. just period. And I think even while it would suck to lose like Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, and who do you think is the next best player after that? Caruso?
Ah, that's an interesting question.
KCP?
Oh, Dwight, right?
Oh, there you go. So after you lose those three guys, can you still put a team around AD and LeBron that would be better than AD or LeBron with those three guys? I still think you still take LeBron and AD.
Like, would you trade Anthony Davis for Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, and Dwight Howard? Would any team in the league make that trade?
Where's I already forgot the guy's name, the poor guy's name, the guy who preceded David Griffin out there in New Orleans.
Oh, Dell Demps.
Yeah. Maybe we should have asked Dell Demps if he wanted Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma,
all right, Dwight Howard. Magic is Thanos, and you're high on mushrooms, and the basketball is a bonsai tree. Answer me this question, Dell.
Riddle me this, Dell. All right, next question. Oh no, we had two good comments, but I won't read those again. So let's go. Yellow Handman writes, question for the pod. Now that we are 10 games in, well, now 11, we have some idea of how Vogel distributes the minutes, although the picture is likely to change with Kuzma and Rondo back in the mix. But based on minutes per game numbers thus far, what do you think of how Vogel has portioned out playing time?
Very happy. Very happy with not only the playing time, but also the rotations. Also curious about Rondo and how he fits in. But
no longer on a minutes restriction.
Yeah, I think by and large, he's made a couple of mistakes putting guys who have no business defending wings, like Siakam and Kawhi. I think the Lakers really hemorrhaged points in their two losses because of that. And so I'm curious to see the Lakers the next time they play a team with an elite wing, although I thought they did a fantastic job against Jimmy Butler in Miami. Mm-hmm. So that's... I really have to dig down deep to look for that. I'm happy. You know, LeBron comes out around the 4 minute mark and of the first and third quarters, starts the second and fourth quarters, gets a little break in the middle, then comes back to close it. AD will play the whole entire first quarter, come back around 5 minutes left in the second, about 6 or 7 minutes left in the fourth. You know, everybody seems to be going in and out of the game around the same time. And honestly, it's been years since we've had that. It's as simple as that seems.
Yeah.
I think guys kind of knowing like, all right, I got another minute and a half left in my shift. I'm going to empty out the gas tank because I know that I'm going to get a rest in a moment. I think that's important.
It is. It's wild that anybody wouldn't think that an 82-game season, that kind of consistency would not matter. Of course it would matter. I do want to kind of come back to the Vogel, and I agree with everything you said about the rotation. I don't have any complaints. I'm a little nervous now that Rondo isn't on that minutes restriction, but I think at this point Vogel has earned some benefit of the doubt as far as how he's going to be able to handle that situation moving forward. I'm going to go further to praise Vogel in this respect. Did I don't know if you happen to catch Shaq saying that coaching doesn't matter in the NBA. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't.
I think there's a version of the point Shaq was trying to make that I think is very viable. He was basically trying to say, I think what Shaq was basically saying, and he was coached by Phil Jackson. Like, nobody who was coached by Phil Jackson would ever in a million years say that coaching doesn't matter. Just ever. That is never going to be a thing. But I think the Chuck was kind of laughing at him for the point. Kenny was kind of making fun of him for the point. EJ went so far as to like jot it down on their board of like crazy shit that those guys say, right? And he threw that up there as well. But I think the version of what Shaq was trying to say, if I'm going to be charitable enough to Shaq to be able to make this point for him, is that the way people generally think of coaching is overrated, right? X's and O's.
Strong agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that in the NBA, in professional sports, really, managing egos and personalities and stuff like that is exponentially more valuable than coaching in the general sense that people seem to think of it in the NBA. And like that's something you would say if you were coached by Phil Jackson. And the reason I'm making this point is to come back to Frank Vogel, because I really think his personality seems to really blend well with what the Lakers need out of a head coach when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Rajon Rondo and JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard in the same locker room.
Yes, that's exactly on point. It's funny, I get this with LFR a lot. Like, people will be like, oh, you do X's and O's. And yeah, that's sort of true, but it's really about making observations. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, while those, you know, your hammer screens on the weak side and your, you know, fist down exit for your corner three and all of these plays that make it sound real smart, that we really know the terminology of the game, mm-hmm. and all that, they matter. They do matter. I don't want to act like they don't, mm-hmm. but they constitute such a small portion of the game because of the transition component. It's not baseball, right? Where you reset after every pitch.
Or football
pitch,
or whatever,
Or football, where you reset after every play. You're going back and forth, and there's more value in taking advantage of the spaces in between or just getting the ball to your best player. Now, there are certainly ways to do that, especially in half-court situations, but transition doesn't just mean this is on a fast break. A good portion, about half of your possessions, come off of those types of plays where there's no whistle. You just get a defensive rebound, mm-hmm. you get a deflection, you go the other way. And the game, they play so much. It's the second, I don't know how many games they play in hockey. I think it's around 80 as well.
I think it's 82. But
is it also 82? Mm-hmm. Okay, so same as hockey. In baseball, they play 162, right? So this is also a human element to it, too, of like, how do you manage? You are around these people so much. Yeah. Bro, I get tired of the other people who cover the Lakers, and I'm around sometimes. So what happens if you don't like the dudes that you're working with, or you don't like your boss, whether it's Vogel or Palenka or anybody else? Like, that whole thing that you were talking about of, like, managing people, And Vogel, I think, has done a masterful job of showing guys like LeBron and AD. So I've shared some stories recently on the LFR part about this, that he's got the brain to really do this, and he can hang with them while also empowering them to the point where, like, you're not going to be like, I'm the coach, I don't care if you're LeBron James, shut up.
There was a play in the fourth quarter, I think, where LeBron literally said, we need a timeout. Looked over at Frank Vogel last night, told him we need a timeout. Walked to the bench before a timeout was even called. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, that's how it should be. LeBron's one of the greatest minds in the history of the NBA. Mm-hmm. And you've got a couple other guys who, you know, love him or hate him. Jason Kidd was one of the smartest players, mm-hmm. at the very least. Rondo. These are not guys that we love, you know, what they do, but the collective brain of this team, holy crap. And so Vogel, if he's managing people rather than being worried about his ego and his credit that he gets, you empower those people. It has to be a collaborative, collective approach with all of these brains, because somebody is going to say something that makes you go, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that way. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be willing to listen. And Vogel's done a great job of that.
Yeah, I don't really, I mean, this is going to strike people as crazy, but I don't really have any complaints about Vogel. I thought he's done a really good job so far.
I do, too. I thought really his observation about getting AD easier shots, I think that's probably the most valid criticism of Vogel at this point. And he's already aware of it. So,
yeah,
cool.
All right. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to keep answering your questions, no matter how high you might have been when you wrote them. All right, so the next question here comes from CMora23. Love the podcast. Thanks for the hard work. It's not hard. my question is, what is going on with the lack of foul calls the Lakers and especially AD have not received since the Memphis game? Hard to watch AD getting banged up so much without getting to the line. Have you noticed that at all? I've noticed a lot of contact on some of AD's shots near the rim, but I don't, like, it's impossible for you and me to talk about refereeing without sounding like we're whining about it.
Well, sure. And I have no problem whining about it. I have not thought that. I have not thought. So first off, I never got a technical when I was a coach, and I regret that. The closest I ever got
Tom Selleck to get thrown out of the game on purpose.
That was enough of an insult to get thrown out of a game?
I mean, when I'm yelling at him, "Hey, Tom," like in a quiet gym, because mm-hmm. I couldn't get his attention. He's like, "My name isn't Tom." I said, "You have a shitty mustache, Tom." And he threw me out of the game.
I think he was probably using shitty. You were coaching what, like 7-year-olds?
No, it was like it was a girls varsity game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, usually they'll allow a little bit of that. So with CIF rules, at least at the time, if you as the head coach got thrown out of the game was over and you forfeited. So there was no, like, your assistant coach gets to take over. There was the girls team. We'd share the gym with the girls team. There was one game where they were up by, like, it was like 29-6 in the third quarter or something like that. They were just demolishing their opponent. And our coach just got a wild hair up his ass about one call and just lost it. And he got ejected.
Yeah.
And the game was over and they lost. The girls were not happy with him whatsoever.
Shouldn't have been.
So I never wanted to get kicked out of a game, but the closest I ever got was I slammed my clipboard down because we made the same goddamn mistake like 3 plays in a row. Oh. We were down by like 10 to a team that we eventually won by like 20, 25.
So your problem is that you cared too much. Is that what you said?
That's basically you know, story of my life, Anthony. You know, hey. So I slammed it down and it was at like a quiet moment in the gym because I was just hot because it just made the same damn thing 3 times in a row. And the ref walked over. I knew the ref and you know, he properly chastised me. And I'm like, I'm just talking to my guys, like, wait for the timeout, wait for when they're beside. All right. Anyway, I'm not much of a complainer when it comes to refs. That's basically my point. I'll lean on one a little bit if I have to, but I don't see a ton of like AD getting hacked. There are some plays around the basket, but he's shooting so many of those like 17 footers.
Yeah.
At like, I mean, you're not going to get fouled on those. I think he's avoiding contact because of his rib and his shoulder. If he deserves more free throws, and he probably does, I don't think it's by much.
Yeah. That's the thing that people need to notice more is, If you were to count up at the end of the games that he isn't getting to the free throw line, count up the number of fadeaway jumpers he's taking from like 15 feet, right? Like, that's why he isn't getting to the line. And yeah, I think it has a lot to do with where he's at physically, and that's going to be a deciding factor moving forward. It's why, frankly, I would have liked to seen him take like a week off or so. I think that would have been smart so that he can get back to getting to the free throw line without having to worry about it so much. But yeah, I just like, I hate watching another team's game and their home, like their home play by play guy and their team assigned color commentator, whatever. Like when they start talking about refereeing, it's just impossible to hear that and not hear them whining about it. So I try to stay away from it myself.
Amen to that.
Hey JF baby writes, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you guys enjoy watching the game? The same Avery Bradley double screen into a JaVale handoff out of Horn's action.
This is in the Suns game, yeah.
Don't know how sustainable it is, but it felt like one of those no, yes every time, but somehow they couldn't stop it. Shout to AB for the biggest rebound of the game after LeBron's in this person's opinion. Yeah, this was after this was the Suns game. I like that set. I don't like that it can sometimes lead to contested pull-up jumpers for Avery Bradley, but I think for every one of those, he's making a good couple decisions that warrant running that play.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm excited to get him back. He's got more ball handling ability than I thought he did when we signed him.
Ability than what Clippers fans told us about.
Yeah, they're still bitter. Oh God, wouldn't it be great if Avery Bradley like knocked them out of a playoff series? Anyway, sorry. Yeah. This season's got my mind going to fantastic places, but yeah, he's a better ball handler than, you know, KCP or other guys that we will run off of those staggers, Danny Green occasionally. So that allows you get into your that allows you, excuse me, to get into your secondary and tertiary actions out of that in a way that that's going to be valuable going forward. I would love to see him come off of a stagger to be able to hit a three. I just think that he's a lot more comfortable in that 18-foot range, and he's okay enough at it. He's a mid-40s type shooter on those type of shots to where it's like, it's not the best possession, but it's not awful either. So if he can combine some playmaking with that, we're good.
He doesn't have the kind of jumper off the dribble that you need to have to be a good three-point shooter off the dribble.
It's too flat. Yeah, you're right. It's too flat.
Yeah. He has a higher release point than most three-point shooters off the dribble have. Like, you look at James Harden, his release point is a little lower than people might think. Steph is like the extreme example of this, right? Trae Young, we just watched, has a lower release point. It's that quick like snapping motion with the wrist that gets the ball out of their hands really quickly, whereas Avery Bradley has more of the classic rise up and release the ball from a high point to make it so that it's tougher to block. That kind of a jumper, and those kinds of jumpers don't translate well to three-point shooting.
That's right.
CJ Mendenhall writes, "Do you wish the Lakers had never traded Lou Williams? I've said a few times I wish they hadn't, and other people would argue that they won too many games had they kept him, thus losing out on the 2017 lottery pick." Blah, 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 blah. The Lakers are where they are right now. I don't really... It would be nice to have Lou Williams, but there's no guarantee they would have been able to keep him on the roster to this point.
Yeah, it's kind of that sliding doors scenario, right? Where this one decision, how does it affect everything else? Now, if you're asking, would I rather have Lou Williams than KCP, or like, can there be some alternate future where I have that? Duh. Like, of course, like a guard who can score like that off of screens, this would be, if this team isn't already the best team in the NBA, it would be in a tier by itself as the best team in the NBA if it had Lou Williams on it. So yes, I would love to have him. I understand why they traded him. The real thing that hurt was how cheaply he re-signed with them.
Yeah.
He's got one of the best contracts in the league at $8 or $9 million a year, but I love Lou. I think he's, you know, one of the most professional scorers in the NBA. I think high school and younger aged kids playing basketball could learn a lot from watching him.
I don't need more kids playing like Lou Williams.
I can't. No, man, he knows how to score, man. He's like 6'1". He can barely jump over a phone book. That's not true. He'll throw one down every once in a while. But he's not some like jaw dropping athlete. Like, guys his size have to be incredibly fast in order to be a potent scorer in the NBA. He does it because he's got just incredibly polished skill and footwork and just everything about him. He's just such a professional that I really appreciate his game.
My hottest take ever that I have never given in public, I've only given this in like DMs and like group texts and stuff like this, is that I would rather have Lou Williams over the course of his career than the dude he learned from a lot in Allen Iverson. If I'm building a team, give me a guy who accepts his role, obviously resigns at the number that Lou resigned with the Clippers, is hugely efficient with very low usage if you need him to be that. I just think, like, maybe the most undervalued skill set in all of professional sports is the ability to understand and accept one's role. And that's what Lou Williams is maybe one of the better examples of ever. He could very easily do like the whole Reggie Jackson who's in Detroit, right? Mm-hmm. Like he could very easily have done the whole Reggie Jackson thing where, like, if Reggie Jackson just accepted that he was a scorer off of the bench and that was his focus, then great. Terry Rozier is another example of that in Charlotte, where if Terry Rozier just accepted the fact he was a scorer off of the bench, then fine, he'd be fine in that role. But Lou Williams understood that, accepted it, and made himself the best version of that. And I think that's a huge reason why the Clippers are as dangerous as they can be.
No, that's a great point.
Let's go one more question here. From New York, but love the Lakers, writes, "Real quick, I'm wondering if you have ever watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, and if you remember watching the Shaq episode, just looking back on that Lakers team, do you think this current team would be able to get to that stardom?" Like, so not just basketball, right? But the fact that Shaq was out there on an HBO show, LeBron already is in that echelon, but do you think AD has that in him, I guess?
I do. AD is a fun guy to be around. He's funny off camera. Mm-hmm. He's very relaxed way about him. He's got kind of a unique look that I think actually the cameras really do like. It's not conventional, but I think it's something where, you know, you're looking at Anthony Davis, very easy to brand. I think that he is a title away from being really, I think, a huge star, as somebody that's easy to brand and market. And he could carry that with charisma. So yeah, I do think that AD can get to that point. And I think you've got some other, like, you know, fun guys. Kuzma's doing all right for himself from a marketing standpoint. And even guys like Danny Green and Jared Dudley, they're going to find their opportunities in LA. That's one of the great parts of being in LA. That's why, you know, it's funny. I saw some criticism about, like, how the Lakers reacted to Kobe and how there's, you know, this cult hero worship of him.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I just don't think other fan bases get it. I think that the experience of being a Laker fan, and I truly believe this. I don't think that this is just, you know, Laker fan myopia, but I think the experience of being a Laker fan is different than any other fan base in the NBA. And I think that bears itself out in how the Lakers travel, how they will take over other arenas. But if you succeed with the Lakers, man, you are set for life. We will love you forever. If you do what Kobe did, you're God forever, right? He did it for 20 years, 5 titles, countless All-Star games, and the way with which he went about his business on the court, whether you like his game or not, he was relentless in a way that made me be like, oh man, I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. And inspired just a generation of people in LA. So if you can inspire Los Angeles and inspire Laker fans, you're a global icon. It's as simple as that.
In last night's game, or a couple days ago game, by the time people are listening to this, there was a play where Davis was running up the sideline, and it looked like he got tangled up on the sideline there. Larry David happened to be at that game last night, by the way. I saw him kind of like trip up a little bit, and I was like, oh my God, are we actually going to get this situation? The thing I like about Anthony Davis as like a personality, and again, I've never met the guy, but I feel like if he doesn't think too much and keeps it easy, he's very easy to get along with. I think where he gets himself into trouble is when he tries to like explain his way out in galaxy brain, his way out of saying something, having said something dumb or having said something that people might consider dumb. But when he's just being himself, I think he's a perfectly fine, like, I think he'll, like you said, he'll do perfectly fine out here, but winning comes first and foremost. Yes. Like, he's not so charismatic that he'll be a star regardless of how things go out here. He needs to win.
No, you've got to do that. I mean, look, Shaq was a star in LA, but it's easy to forget those 96 through 99 seasons. Because by 99, that's what made that comeback over Portland in Game 7 of 2000. Mm-hmm. So I remember that moment so vividly. Lakers were down by like 15. It was the end of the third quarter. And Brian Shaw banked in a 3.
Yep.
And it just felt like this small bit of release because Portland was whooping us. And it was just like, it was similar to Game 7 of the 2010 NBA Finals, if you're not old enough to remember the Western Conference Finals in 2000, in that it's like, just like with Kobe, I was like, man, I've been defending your ass on message boards for the last like 10 years. You're going to shoot like crap and lose game set. Like, please don't go out like this. Mm-hmm. That was the overriding emotion. Please don't go out like this. And that's what 2000 Western Conference Finals, because those 3 years before, by the time that came around, it was like, can Shaq win a championship? Is he too focused on making records, making movies and all that other stuff, right? And that feeling of just like, oh God, is it going to end like this again? Shaq didn't really become the icon for the Lakers until he was able to get into those three-peats.
Yeah, I mean, that play, so Shaq has that alley-oop that he finishes from Kobe, right? Mm. And you almost saw like the burden lifted off of him to where he even did he I think Kobe jumped up into his arms or did he jump into somebody else's arms?
I don't remember.
I forget what it was, but it was one of those moments that you could just see it was just they kind of finally got it. They kind of understood like what the city is about. And I don't want to sound like, you know, LA is this extraordinary thing. It is in this respect. The Lakers are in this respect. But I hate it when New Yorkers say like, "Oh, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere." Well, you guys have made it so fucking hard that nobody makes it there. I don't think you should keep on bragging about how hard you make it for your athletes out there when you guys are like so. There's been such a gap in successes for New York, especially regarding basketball, that I maybe would bring yourself down a little bit and then maybe enjoy some success before you hold yourself up on that pedestal. But the Lakers, I think with the city and like my feelings toward Kobe are complicated. As a Laker fan, he's my favorite player of all time. He welcomed in, my love for basketball in ways that other players simply did not. And when you're there at that game, and again, like what we're coming back to is when Kobe walked off the floor for that last time, when he scored 60 points in that last game, there was not just like the overwhelming sadness that came with, man, we're never going to watch this guy on the court ever again. But there was also this vibe of uneasiness that came with, wait, so what's next for the Lakers?
What's next? Yeah.
You know, and what we found was what was next for the Lakers was kick to the balls after kick to the balls after kick to the balls. And so I think some of what we saw last night, while it was also obviously people happy to see Kobe back at a Laker game, but I felt like last night some of the release and some of what people were so happy to see him there for was, okay, we're good, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we actually know what's next. We found what's next, and it's actually pretty freaking awesome.
I love that, Anthony. I think I couldn't have said it better myself.
Man. I had some of the mushrooms from the first guy's questions, and
that's
and,
right.
And
man. We should do that for one show, a special episode,
and not tell people what we did.
Right, right, yeah. Just go with it. See if anyone catches on.
I like
maybe
it.
Maybe we already have.
Maybe we got to that special place. All right, this was fun. Good episode. We'll be back again to do it again tomorrow. Well, the Lakers are in action tomorrow, so the Lakers might be Pete. The next time you and I talk, the Lakers might be 10 games over 500.
Amazing. Amazing.
That'd be incredible. Let's hope for it. But for now, thank you guys for the questions. We still have a bunch to get to over the course of the week, so we will continue to do that. Lakers take on the Oklahoma City Thunder tomorrow night, or tonight by the time you guys are listening to this. So plenty of great stuff on the horizon. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.